here. Let me do a quick check. I think everything's okay there. I'm technically supposed to be working tonight, so I'm checking my text. Good to see everybody tonight. We're going to pick up in our study on how to be one. And tonight our study is going to focus on Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Those verses will be up on the screen, but if you want to turn in your own Bibles to that, more than welcome and encouraged to do that as well. I think just as kind of a intro, though, into this, you know, we've been working our way to Ephesians chapter 4, but primarily verses 4 through 6, the seven ones that we talk about there, and the basis of unity as we look at it. But before we get that, verses 1 and through 3 are extremely important because they really set the context for the following verses, as you might think, and everything. Verses 4 through 6 are not standalone. They follow verses 1 through 3. And if we're going to properly understand what the, you know, not so much what the one body is and the one spirit and the one hope and one Lord, one faith, one baptism, and one God and Father of all. While these first three verses don't explain those to us, what it does do is provide us the context and the attitude of heart that we need to have in implementing and how we're going to approach those ones that are going to help us to build unity. Okay? So, with that, let's just go ahead and get into this. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. On one hand, there's not a lot of words there. It's three verses, and we're actually able to get all three verses in big enough font to where you could read it for the most part back there, I think. But I tell you, there is so much in these three verses that Paul says, and all we're going to do tonight is we're going to step through this. We're going to step through these three verses and just take a harder look at what Paul, or the Holy Spirit through Paul, is trying to get us to understand. The first thing that I want to look at here is that word beseech. I'm not going to say that's a word that's foreign to us or anything. I think we've heard of it. But, you know, I can't think of the last time I used the word beseech in everyday language. But I think it's a word we're familiar with. If you were going to define beseech, how would you define it? What comes to mind?
Beg, plead.
Plead? You said beg?
Beg,
plead, urge. Okay. Sorry, what did you say?
Encourage.
All good words. Everything and all along the right track. When you look at there, it's exhort, encourage, implore, which is along the line there. I think the thing that I like to look at here is he's not saying, hey, you know, there's something you might want to look at. I got something that I just want to kind of give to you for your consideration. No, this is something that he's trying to use to exhort, to implore on them. So what the Holy Spirit is doing, he's guiding Paul to tell them something that's key to their growth. This is something that you need to listen to, Ephesians, if you're going to be able to do what he's going to talk about afterwards. So let me get your attention and listen to what I have to say. So if the Ephesians needed to listen to what he had to say, I think it's safe to say we need to listen to what he has to say in this case. So it's a little word, but I think it's a big thing. But what is it that Paul beseeches them to do? Beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called. Almost kind of a tongue twister there of sorts. But what we're going to do is we're going to define the words a little bit, but then Let's try to put it together. What's the message that he's trying to get across there? But first of all, to walk. Not talking about, you know, walking along the thing here, but how we live to regulate one's life. So we use that word in that way all the time. That's familiar to us. Worthy, also used just the way I think we would think it would be in this case. Something that's appropriate, suitable, a manner worthy of or to think about, or to think or count worthy type of thing here. So, in other words, we're doing something appropriately, something suited for something. So, we're going to conduct ourselves, conduct our lives in a way that's suitable or appropriate for what? The calling, and this is an invitation. You have that herald. You have somebody here who's calling you to do something, to get your attention. So we're going to walk according to this calling with, which just that specific invitation that we were called by, that we were called. This call aloud with a loud voice. Okay, so we're called through the loud voice of the gospel. I was going through those quickly and forgot to stop and to read some passages. So let's go ahead and kind of go back a little bit here. Let's let's just flip a couple of chapters over in Ephesians. We won't read every one of these verses, but Ephesians chapter 1, verse 18, I think is a good example when he's talking about the calling and what he's talking about there. So, let's see here. Brad, you got that?
I do.
Does it not say calling? It's okay. Go for it.
I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened so that you may know what is the hope of his calling.
He gets it.
What is the wealth of his glorious inheritance in the saints?
Okay. So, talking about the hope of his calling, and that calling is associated with the riches of the glory of the inheritance of the saints. So, we're calling. That's what we're looking at there. As we go on down, let's just go ahead and read 2 Thessalonians 13 through 14. And let's see here. My pages are all sticking together. I don't know about yours. Okay. Erica, you got that?
Okay.
2 Thessalonians? That's okay. Okay. I'll tell you what, I've got it right. I'll just read it real quick. But we are all bound to give thanks to God and always to you, brethren, beloved by the Lord, because God from the beginning chose you for salvation through sanctification by the Spirit and belief in the Word, to which he called you by our gospel for the obtaining of the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. Okay? So the Lord has called us through the gospel. So when we talk about this calling and how we're being called, it's through the gospel that we're called. Okay? So we ran through those definitions quick, but what does all that mean? Go ahead.
Well, in English at least, calling though, it's not like, hey, I heard somebody and I'm going over that way.
Okay.
Right? A calling is it's something that resonates deeply with you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead and... So when you think about it in that way and everything here, what's he saying when he goes back, when we're talking about what's all this mean, when he's saying to walk worthy of the calling with which you've been called, what's the point there? What's he beseeching them to do? Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing about it. The gospel is there for everybody to hear. Okay, so the gospel is calling everybody, but not everybody answers the call. So what he's getting at here is that you've been called to this, and the implication is you've answered that call. You said yes, you've responded to it, and everything here. So now that you've responded to it, it's that That gospel that called you provides a standard for you to live by and to conduct your life. So walk, conduct your life in a manner worthy, appropriate to that standard that has called you. That God has, as Bill has put it, that purpose that God has. Conduct yourself worthy. Walk in a way worthy and appropriate according to that standard. So, the next question would be, how do we do that? Do we do it like the Pharisees? Or not? Well, that's what he gets to next. Okay, you're going to walk according to that standard. Oops, let's see here. See if I missed anything in what I was going to say there about what all this means. We've answered the call to the gospel. Gospel provides standard. I think I actually got it all. Okay. Sometimes that's easier said than done with me. So what are we to walk with? Okay, he's telling us, here's what you need to walk. Here's how you need to walk. But what are we to walk with in terms of an attitude of heart? Well, let's look here. With all lowliness and gentleness, with long suffering. Well, that's certainly not the way the Pharisees did it, is it? Anything. But again, let's just kind of step through these, because this is where you really get into it. Okay, with, in the midst of, my, basically with, you know. All means all. Lowliness, okay? Humiliation of mind, modesty. I love this part there out of Thayer's. A deep sense of one's littleness. Okay? And let's go ahead and turn over to these two verses, Philippians 2, 3, and 1 Peter 5, 5. All right. Josh, you got that?
Philippians 2, verse 3.
Yep.
Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself.
All right. So what does that tell you when we're talking about lowliness of mind? How is that described in here? Or how is that demonstrated? He talks about... let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind. What's he say after that? Right. Exactly. It's not about you, but others before you. Yeah.
Roll that into the calling with which we're called. Just a few verses later, we talk about the mind and how that's supposed to look. Well, like Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Everything, the best example that we could have of what this lowliness of mind, if there was anybody who could say, hey, look at me, you know, and everything, Jesus absolutely would have been right in saying it, but he gave us the perfect example of humility. Okay, so when we're looking at this, that's the kind of mind we have. 1 Peter 5:5. Let's see here. Joe, have you already? Did you jump ahead and figure out you were going to be next? What's the point in this? What are we seeing when we're talking about that humbleness, that lowliness of mind, of heart? How is that demonstrated in this verse? Yeah. Okay. In other words, for people to, in submitting, younger people submit to to your elders. But be submissive to one another. Goes hand in hand with the previous verse we read. Everything here. So, and to be clothed in humility. How would you, if somebody's clothed in humility, how are you clothed in humility? How would you describe that? He had an answer. Okay, well, covered. Okay. Yeah. Okay. 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 Well, let's go ahead, Bill. There you go. Okay. All right. Oh, any other? All very good thoughts. Go ahead, Dan. Yeah, and I tell you, what everybody said is right on, excellent points, but I really like that last part there as far as here, because I think that gets into a lot of the context of what Paul is trying to get across to them back in Ephesians 4, 1 through 3, and everything, because he's beseeching them to do things, which means you've got a choice. Choose to do this. I'm urging you to do this, which by implication means they could ignore him and go in a different direction. So yeah, so that choice to do this, is this the way we're going to conduct ourselves or not? And everything. So everything everybody said was exactly right. Great points in that. But when we're looking at this, it's going to be with lowliness and there, but also gentleness. Gentleness, meekness. You can read everything that he has there. But if you were going to define gentleness or meekness, how would you define it? What if you have somebody who's meek, what stands out to you about that person? The way I actually kind of want to ask the question is what it's too open-ended in some ways. But what's that quality about the person? Not just humility, but what is accompanying that humility? Self-control, I think I heard. Okay, that goes with it.
Compassion
goes with it. Strength. Kind of pull that thread. Strength in what way?
Well, I mean,
you're right.
It doesn't hurt anybody because they're incapable of it. It's not mean. They're weak.
Mm-hmm.
So it's meekness is having the capability, but choosing not to, or whatever it could be then.
Yeah. Any other thoughts? The shorthand definition that I heard a long time ago that has just stuck with me for many, many, many years is, and when you said strength, it really popped in my mind, is power under control. And the example that I used to give all the time, we only have maybe half this audience that would even remember the TV character I'm about to mention. But way back when, there was this TV show called Bonanza. And they had this guy on there who was this big old guy named Hoss. Those of you that remember or seen the reruns, you know Hoss Cartwright. That was an example of power under control, because you didn't want to make him mad. But he was always this gentle giant type of a guy. The other description I give is a coachable athlete. Somebody who has all the talent in the world, but they're not so caught up in their own talent and think they know everything that they'll listen to their coach to actually make them better. To me, that's what a meek person is. Yeah, they've got the talent, they've got the power, they've got everything. But you know what? They're going to put their themselves in the hands of somebody who knows more than they do. And in the case of an athlete, help them improve. Help them get even better. Learn how to use that talent in ways they never thought of. It's having the power, but it's under control. It's being able to put your hand, put yourself in somebody else's hands. And in our case, whose hands are we putting ourselves in? God's, first and foremost. And everything. But also, if we think about it, not quite to God, who are we, when you go to these previous verses that we're looking at. Well, let's go ahead and look at these verses here that we have listed. Over in Galatians 5:23 and 1 Peter 3:15. Leon, were you already grabbing one? Which one did you get? Go ahead and read Galatians 5:23. Okay. And that's part of the, you know, fruits of the Spirit. So gentleness is a fruit of the Spirit and everything. Lee, do you have 1 Peter 3:15 yet? I was looking at the New King James. It says in meekness and fear, but gentleness and respect. So it says there. So it's an example here. You know, it's like, hey, we could be, you know, like, hey, we've got this. We know what we're doing, and come across in a not so humble way, but being respectful to the people we're talking to, but also respectful to God in that response that we're given, but in meekness. It's not us who has it, it's Him who's given through us. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I really like this definition. I don't think I've really ever understood what meekness was until reading this. I feel like the word gentleness, like my immediate thought is like, oh, well, I'm going to handle other things gently. But it's not. It's like, I will allow myself to be handled gently. It's like a dog. To your point about power and strength, like, I can have a dog that, you know, has sharp teeth and, you know, every once in a while can bite my arm off.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I discipline it or I put my hand on it, like, it, you know, is meek.
Mm-hmm.
It bows its head down. It's, you know, tender around me and around, like, little kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good example.
It is.
It's not so much, like, how I treat other people. It's being meek and gentle in my relationship with God and what He's doing to me and how I react under the circumstances He gives me, good or bad.
Yeah, and that's a great point, too, because it's like, okay, in these two verses, these last two words we have, this lowliness of heart and gentleness, what it is, it's about us. What's our attitude? It's not that we're treating people lowly or meekly. Our attitude is lowliness. Our attitude is gentleness, meekness, everything. Where that's where it starts with us. And what we're going to get to here in just a second is, if we're that way, then how is that going to be demonstrated towards others, and how we're going to demonstrate it towards others. But let's go back here just for a second. So, oh, long-suffering. I almost got ahead of myself. Long-suffering. Basically, patience, forbearance. I love this. Slowness in avenging wrongs. I think that's a great thing to be thinking about here. It's like somebody's wronged us. We got to get back at them. No. There's a slowness. Let's stop and think. We don't need to escalate things. But patience with regard to people. Okay? Patience with regard to people. Everything. This is how we're going to treat people. Okay? Galatians 5:22, it's just simply talked about how it's another fruit of the Spirit. But, and this time, 2 Peter 3:15, and I double-checked it today, actually is 2 Peter 3:15, not a mistake of a restatement of 1 Peter 3:15 that we just read. So, Caitlin, you got that? All right, so when you're looking at that, whose patience is he talking about there? God's patience towards who?
Us.
Everybody. You know, and again, you know, going back to what Steve was talking about earlier as far as it there in Philippians 2, the example of Christ and humility, well, couple that here with God and his patience towards us. If God's going to be that patient towards us, do we have a right not to be patient with others? Go ahead.
As far as the point there in 2 Peter, if you go back to like verse 9, mm-hmm. The only reason we're still alive is because God gives us an undue amount of grace and patience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's... This is an older song, but, you know, it's by Billy Joel, so some of you might still have heard it or whatever, but remember the song, Only the Good Die Young? Well, I remember that song and sing it, but it's like, here's kind of the reason. God's giving patience, as patient, he's giving people the opportunity to repent, to come back to him. That's not the message of Billy Joel's song by any stretch of the imagination. But if you stop and think about it, it's like, you know, be thankful to God that he is being patient and everything. It does make you wonder. A lot of bad dudes. Back. On one hand, it's like, okay, Enoch, you know, he only was, what, 300 and whatever, 400, whatever it was, because he was just a kid. But no, so here's the thing. Here. We have all these things here. So what does all that mean? Let's go back to the verse. Whoops. So with all lowliness, gentleness, and long-suffering, I think we kind of answered as we were going through these. Trying to get ourselves right. Let's see, let me catch it up here. It starts with us having a humble heart. Okay? Remembering our shortcomings, where we once were, etc. You can fill in some more blanks there, I'm sure. Excuse me. But then apply that humble heart to be patient with our brothers and sisters' shortcomings. Or whatever that may be. If we think they've wronged us, whatever. To do that. But all it's there is to help them grow as well as ourselves. Okay. But we're going to walk in this and everything to do this. But I think it's important that he started it off this way. Instead of just saying, hey, you be patient or you go strive for unity. It's got to start with us and our heart and having all the right things there if we're going to have any success at all in being able to achieve that unity. Okay. So, how will this walk manifest itself? Okay. Bearing with one another in love. So, we've got ourselves straight. Lowly heart, lowliness of heart, gentleness, long-suffering, but bearing one another with one another in love. Bearing, to hold oneself up against. I just love the second one here, to put up with. I think that's pretty simple. We put up with. Okay, bear with, endure, forbear, suffer. Okay, a holding back. What are we, in this case here, when we're thinking about this word, what are we holding back? I'm sorry.
Okay, what we might say.
Or else, you know, discuss what we might say, what we might, what else? Do. We're holding back. We're controlling ourselves. Instead of lashing out, we're holding back. Everything here. That's it, but no, Rich, you're right, because what we're doing here, you know, depending on how people are acting or whatever, here we're trying to bear with them, cut some slack. Yeah.
Yeah, my kids get mad at me because I'm constantly telling them you need to be gracious and you need to be tolerant. And when they get into like some bickering, I'll take this step back and replay the scenario. I'm like, okay, who here in this scenario should be gracious and who should be tolerant? Because in any situation where you're like annoying one another,
I was just waiting for you to give the answer as to which kid said what. And said, okay, yeah, they should be bearing with me. Or whatever. But no, that's right. And that's the whole thing here, is that if we are bearing with each other, then what's happened? Nothing's escalating. We're working through things. We're able to work together through things. Okay? One another means one another. Literally, when you look up that word, that's the definition. So, it means what it says. Love. We talked about this a lot, especially when we go back to the spring and the lessons that Jason was giving then. Agape. But it gets back to that. We talked about it earlier as far as meekness and things being a choice. That's what all this is. We choose to do what's best for one another. Okay? So, we're bearing with one another in love. So, whoops. Okay, now let's just go ahead and do that. We choose to conduct ourselves out of a humble heart, out of love for our brothers and sisters. We put up with each other's shortcomings, and you could, I'm sure, there may be some other things that you can think of there. Okay? But that's the thing about it here. It starts with that humble heart, that lowliness of heart, meek and gentle heart that we have. And if we have that, then is it easier to bear with one another in love? If you don't have, let me ask it this way. If you don't have a humble heart, if you don't think of yourself in a lowly manner, go back to the definition there that we have a higher esteem of ourselves than what we should. How easy is it to bear with one another? That's exactly right. Almost impossible. Everything is so. I have to catch myself all the time because, you know, I had a list of pet peeves that long, at least, and everything. And I've got to stop myself on occasion And just sit here and say, wait a second here. You know, whether you're talking about here and what we're doing or at work or whatever, it's like, okay, I'm 61. I've got a few years behind me. Okay? But man, sometimes I have to stop and think, well, what was I like at 24? Did I know everything then that I think I know now? The answer is usually no. I thought I knew a lot more. But I really didn't. But you know what? That 20 whatever, I'm not going to say 24 or whatever you are. But whatever that 20-something person is now, it's like, guess what? I was there once. What was I like? And how are and then I get to thinking about, well, what about the people that were around me then that really helped me to grow and to get past that? How were they treating me? That's humbling. At least it is for me. It's very humbling to me because then I realize, you know what? I wasn't always as together as I think I am now. And I know I'm not all that together. Don't get me wrong. But I was really not together. Okay? But people were patient with me. I actually listened to them sometimes. And because of that, we were able to work through and I was able to get better. That's what I've got to remember when I'm dealing now with people as an elder or in the job I have or whatever the case may be. I got to remember that.
Just as wrong now as I was then. And that's an important point for me to remember now, is that I'm just as wrong now as I was then. I mean, I've improved a few things, yes, but there's so much more that the thing to be improved is a file is so much larger than what I've improved that it's not really.
We're always a work in progress. We're always a work in progress. The thing is that the more you know, the more you realize, man, I'm still not there. Type of thing there. So that's to me, that's kind of how I apply this. That's one of the lessons I take away from this, is just, yeah, to not think of myself as high as I should or as I could, think more lowly, but to have patience, be willing to bear with others, and if I can have the right heart in doing that, it makes it a lot easier to do it because I'm going to remember not only my own shortcomings, but as the verses that we've looked at up to now, pointing to Jesus and the Father as our examples and everything, if they've put up with me and us the way they have, that should humble us as well in being able to work and deal with each other. All right, so thought I pushed the button. There we go. So how should we walk? We're almost there. Endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. All right. So, as we look at these words, endeavoring to use speed, to make effort, be prompt or earnest, to exert oneself, to make haste, to be zealous, to be diligent. Okay, if you're endeavoring to do something, out of all those words and everything there, what's it basically saying? If you're endeavoring, what has to happen? There you go. It doesn't just happen. It's something that you have to put effort into. I love this thing, to exert oneself. In the case we're talking about, we're talking about what we do. Okay, so if we're going to achieve unity, guess what? It takes work, and we're going to have to exert ourselves in that. Okay? To keep, to guard from loss, to attend carefully, to take care of. So, you know, if we use the word keep in that way today, but I don't know if maybe we totally get it or get it to this degree, where when we're keeping it, it's not just that we're setting it aside and kind of making sure it doesn't break or anything, but we are really guarding it and to attending to it carefully. Okay? There's a little bit maybe extra care than what I've associated with that word in the way we look at this. Okay? And unity, that one oneness that we talk about. So what are we looking at? When we're talking about this unity, when we're talking about endeavoring, oh, you know what, there was more words there. Probably help if I actually looked at the slides that I have here. Okay. Of the Spirit, belonging to Him, bond, that which binds together. Okay. And I think that's, you know, it's bond. You're just talking, okay, these, when you look at that word, and especially if you go to the Colossians and look at that, it's talking about those ligaments and everything, everything that's kind of holding the body together. That's the picture to get here. Is when you're thinking about the body and all the ligaments and joints and everything, they're just wrapped together, that bond that's there, how they're bound together to form the body. But this peace, that state of tranquility and everything that's there. So, when we think about what all that means, it takes effort. It takes work and effort. When we're talking about being one in the Lord, when we're talking about having unity amongst ourselves, It doesn't just happen. It takes work. It's something that we have to be constantly thinking about and working towards and having in the forefront of our minds that this is what we want. It's real easy to say, I just want to have a bunch of chaos and to not have unity. To put all that aside and everything and to realize, okay, we're trying to come together. And you know what? In general, we agree on things here, but if we really got down and talking about some things, could we come up with some things that maybe we have a little bit of a difference of opinion on or anything? Yeah. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But we work together. We listen to each other. If there's things that we really need to talk about and figure out, okay, hey, what do we need to do? We listen. We talk to each other. We try to work through things. We bear with each other and everything. We're putting others first before ourselves. Okay, so, but the thing is, we're in working towards that unity, we see it as something that's worth striving for and maintaining because we know that that's what's going to bind us together and hold us together. Okay. So here we're going to wrap up just about 2 minutes earlier. Go ahead, Wade.
I was thinking about how to understand that phrase, endeavor to keep the union. You're in the bond, peace. Because peace is the last word, I always read it and think, okay, if we do all this book, then peace will be at the end.
Okay.
You can also read it as the peace that we have is what binds us in unity, right? So it starts with God's peace. God, Jesus says, my peace I give to you, right? Peace is a fruit of the Spirit in our lives. All of Paul's letters start with grace and peace be to you from God. So peace is a gift from God. And if I have the Spirit within me, I have a peace. I have a satisfaction, a contentment that I'm a child of God, and that's all I need to be. Right? And so if that's my attitude of peace that comes from God in the relationship that I have with Him, that I'm content to be a child of His, loved by Him, and you're in the same way, then we're not in competition with each other. Right? And so, like that Philippians 2 passage about self-condition is. You know, James 3 has the passage about, you know, where does all the strife come from? Well, it comes from the selfish ambition that's going on within you. But the harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace, right? So if we all start with the peace that comes from God and the contentment to just be His child, then that binds us together if we share that same peace and allows us to be united in His Spirit, right? But, yes, there is an endeavoring for us. We have to not mess it up. But the peace really comes from Him and the uniting work of His Spirit in Him too.
Yeah, good thoughts there. Anything else? Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah,
Yeah, I love the way he said it. I think not only is that he's binding us together to be his children, but as he gets to later in the chapter, actually be one body with his spirit uniting all of us.
Okay. No, good thoughts. Appreciate all that here. So, when we think, let me catch up. So how do we be one? Well, when we put all that together, what we were reading in those three verses, we must want to be like God. Must want to be one. We must work to be one. We've got to want it. And we've got to work for it. Okay. And I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But as we look ahead now to the next verses, for the rest of our time here, through December, with the exception of a couple of classes, we're going to be looking at verses 4 through 6. And each class is going to take one of those seven ones. Okay. But when we're thinking about, you know, one faith, one hope, all those things, this is what led to it. Okay. Those are key. That's going to be the basis of unity. This is what we're unified on. But the heart that goes with that is just as important. Because you may have all the right things, but if you don't have the right heart, you're still not going to have unity. And you may have a great heart, but if you don't have all the right things, you still can't have unity the way God wants you to. So they all go together. And it's something that we should be striving for in everything that we do. Any closing thoughts here or things here? It's coming right up to 8 o'clock now. One last chance if anybody wants the last word. All right. Thank you all. Great comments tonight. We're going to be doing our rotation here. So starting next week, Greg will be down here and Jason will be upstairs with the high school and middle schoolers. So look forward to that. All right. Thanks all very much.